Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Movie Nights Roundtable. It is just me on camera and on the mic today, but I'm not alone because I have you to get me through the episode. I want to see your comments. I want to see your thoughts about all of these amazing stories that I have for you guys, and we have a ton of fucking stories, so I'm not going to waste any time, and I'm going to dive right in right now. Up first are two stories from The Hollywood Reporter and Deadline, but they cover similar things, so I'm going to combine them into kind of one thought, and that is, we are seeing a lot of actors become movie stars, and they start to make overall deals with these studios. It's something we've covered over the past few weeks with creatives like writers and directors, but now actors are taking the leap, and they're starting their own overall deal with studios. And the two actors I really want to point out are Timothée Chalamet making a deal with Warner Brothers, and Ryan Gosling making a deal with Amazon. Regarding Chalamet and Warner Brothers, I'm going to pull from The Hollywood Reporter. Warner Brothers Motion Picture Group is staying in business with Timothée Chalamet. The movie company has signed the star of its back-to-back box office hits in Wonka and Dune Part 2 to a multi-year first-look feature deal. Details were not disclosed, but the company said it would collaborate with the star on projects he would both act in and produce. The article goes on to give a quote from people from Warner Brothers basically saying that they loved Timothée Chalamet and he does a great job promoting films and they want to be in business with him, and it talks about the money that Wonka and Dune Part 2 made. And ultimately, I think this is a really good idea for both parties. On Warner Brothers' side, you have a star who is being recognized as a real talent from great filmmakers. He's a box office draw and is popular both in the, you know, rich artistic side and the social media side. And if you're Timothée Chalamet, you want to be able to raise your profile even more. And a great way to do that is by producing films, getting producer credits. And what better way than to go to Warner Brothers and say, hey, I like this script, I want it to be made, and I want to star in it. You know, that reaching that as an actor is a game changer. You know, the years of just auditioning, getting rejected, and then you hit a stage of you're getting parts, but you still audition for parts. You audition, you get the part, you audition, you get the part. Then you get to a point where you're just getting offers. Every actor wants that. And then the next step is now you can go to studios and say, we're making this. And they'll say yes, which is crazy. And for those of you that don't know, a first look deal, what it basically is it allows an actor to go to a studio and say, hey, I like this project, and I signed a deal with you saying that I'd go to you first to make it. And basically, it gives the studio the right to look at it first and decide if they want to make it or not. So it is possible that Timothée Chalamet goes to Warner Brothers and says, hey, I really want to make this movie. Do you guys want it? And they say, no, you can go make it with somebody else. That's entirely possible. But he legally would not be allowed to go to somebody else first. He would have to go to Warner Brothers. That's what that deal kind of does. And in a similar deal, Ryan Gosling is helping start a production company with Jesse Henderson. The company's going to be called General Admission, and they have inked a multi-year first-look deal with Amazon Studios. I'm going to pull from Deadline for this. Hot off his Best Supporting Actor nomination for Barbie, Ryan Gosling is launching a new production company, General Admission, with former Apple Original Films executive Jesse Henderson. And launching this new venture, the duo have inked a three-year first-look film deal at Amazon MGM Studios. General Admission's objective will be to collaborate with world-class filmmakers and create whole theatrical and streaming events with all genres, fun, transformative entertainment for everyone. Under the pact, Amazon MGM Studios will have a first look on narrative features, some of which Gosling will star in, and that General Admission intends to produce for both theatrical and streaming. So it's a similar thing to Timothée Chalamet. Gosling's deal is mostly to produce, but he can kind of pick and choose when he wants to star in them, it seems like, and it is for narrative feature film. So it doesn't necessarily cover the TV side, but it says it will allow for both theatrical and streaming events. Ryan Gosling is no stranger to big box office hits. He was just in the biggest movie of last year and being Barbie, and I'm sure he knows as a producer, you know, you can save a lot of money on the production budget by taking it out of the upfront salary and giving it back on back-end points for theatrical. And the reason why a lot of streaming movies cost a lot more is because you eliminate that option and you have to pay people up front. So I think it just depends on the type of role that he wants or the type of films he wants to see produced with Jesse Henderson. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as well. But I think you're going to start seeing other companies do this. I know a few years ago, Disney and Marvel got Dustin Daniel Creighton on the director side to be an overall deal with them. I think you're going to start seeing this with Apple. You're going to start seeing this with Netflix. Like, you're going to see this a lot. And it's nothing that you haven't seen before, but I feel like we're going to see it even more than we have been seeing it previously. And it's a bit new that we're doing it with actors. It's usually for writing and directing. So it's interesting to see. What do you guys think about Timothée Chalamet and Ryan Gosling making overall deals with Warner Brothers and Amazon respectively? Let me know in the comments below as we move on to our next story. And this next story comes to us from Deadline. Scott Derrickson will direct a Night of the Hunter adaptation for Universal. This is fucking exciting news. Night of the Hunter is a classic horror movie, and Scott Derrickson, to me, is one of the best horror filmmakers working today. He's easily in the top five. The Black Phone from 2021 was my third favorite movie of that year. I think that film is exceptional. He's also made films like Sinister, which is crazy scary, and The Exorcism of Emily Rose. And of course, famously, he also directed Doctor Strange. He just recently wrapped on a movie that has Miles Teller in it. I forget the name of that movie, but we should be seeing details on it soon. Regarding Night of the Hunter, I'm going to pull from Deadline. Scott Derrickson has been set to direct an adaptation of Davis Grubb's classic 1953 novel, The Night of the Hunter, for Universal Pictures. Working from his script, written with C. Robert Cargill, his longtime collaborator on The Black Phone, Doctor Strange, and other projects, Peter Gethers, will produce through his Cranmar Delicious Mysterious Productions, alongside Amy Pascal, whose Pascal Pictures has a first-look deal with the studio. That's interesting. Infamously, usually works over there with Sony, but she's with Universal now. And it goes on to talk about the book and the original film with Robert Mitchum. Listen, this is exciting news, not only as a film fan, but as a horror fan. And I know a lot of people are probably anti-remake, and I used to be that way as well. You know, I get very protective of things that I enjoy and kind of don't want to see it quote-unquote ruined. But something that I've come to realize over time is remakes aren't bad as a concept. Yes, there are a lot of bad films that are remakes, but there are also a lot of great films that are remakes and reboots. And the whole concept of remaking something and rebooting something, if done for the right reasons, can actually just turn out with multiple great movies. Best case scenario, this movie's great, and now there are two great Night of the Hunter movies. Worst case scenario, the movie isn't good, and nothing happens to the original film. You know, you can still go watch Night of the Hunter, and actually, a lot of studies have shown that whenever you remake a project, interest in the original shoots up significantly, and you see it higher on streaming charts, on PVOD sales, on even on physical media. So the result of this worst case scenario, if the film is bad, is more people have seen the original than ever have before. And I don't think that's a bad thing. That's why I kind of welcome remakes with open arms now. There's a potential to have multiple great stories revolving the same thing. What do you guys think about Scott Derrickson doing a remake of Night of the Hunter? Let me know in the comments below as we move on to our next story. Sticking with Deadline, going into the world of Star Trek. And this I found to be really interesting. J.J. Abrams rebooted Star Trek in 2009, and he made that film. He made the second film, Star Trek Into Darkness, and then Justin Lin came on to direct Star Trek Beyond, a movie that I actually quite like, by the way. It didn't do that well financially because it had a horrible marketing campaign, but I enjoyed that little trilogy, and I'm not a diehard Trekkie by any stretch of the imagination. The 2009 J.J. Abrams movie was my first introduction to Star Trek, and it allowed me to go in, and I've watched a couple episodes of the original series. I watched a couple episodes of Next Generation. There's tons of Star Trek, and one day, maybe when I retire, I plan on doing a deep dive and watching all of it. There's just so much to really get into, but that trilogy was a solid little trilogy, at least I thought. I know a lot of Star Trek fans disagree heavily. But Star Trek IV, with that cast from that rebooted trilogy, is happening. And they're going to be doing it with the flight attendant screenwriter, Steve Yockey. And I'm going to take this from... Oh, I said Deadline earlier. It was Variety. Excuse me. I'm taking this from Variety. Steve Yockey, creator of the Mac series The Flight Attendant, is joining Starfleet as the new screenwriter for Star Trek IV. Story details remain under a powerful cloaking device. Ha-ha. But Paramount Pictures and Bad Robot still intend the project to be the final chapter for the cast that rebooted the franchise in movie theaters with 2009's Star Trek, including Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana, Carl Urban, John Cho, Simon Pegg, and of course the late Anton Yelchin, who was taken from us way too early. Star Trek IV is going to be one of those movies that is talked about for how many false starts it had and how many different versions of this movie exist. Because if you recall, not too long ago, before Matt Shackman committed to directing Fantastic Four, he was attached to direct a Star Trek movie, and it was rumored to be like Star Trek IV with that cast. And it eventually fell apart that way. If you go back before that, There was Quentin Tarantino even played with an idea of doing a Star Trek movie, which could have even been Star Trek 4. And those who read like the small outline that he wrote said that it would have been cool and it would have been metal, but it just never happened. Even before that, and I wonder how many of you guys remember this. The original idea for Star Trek 4, when it was like going to shortly come out after Star Trek Beyond, was it was going to involve time travel, and Chris Hemsworth was going to return as Captain Kirk's father, because Chris Hemsworth played a very small role as Captain Kirk's father in 2009 Star Trek. And that would have been really interesting. And the reason why that project never materialized was because Chris Hemsworth and Chris Pine at that time were incredibly expensive. It was in the heyday of Phase 3 of the MCU. Chris Pine had been making killer movie after killer movie and starring roles. And basically, it just would have been really expensive. And they had committed a deal to the actors to pay them a certain amount, and then they tried to go back on that deal for only the actors to be like, look, it's not our fault that you guys are messing up the finances here. Like, you told us this is what we'd be paid, and it's not happening. It's a very fascinating story if you want to go look into it, but that was another version of Star Trek 4 that could have happened. And so I'm interested to see what this version of Star Trek 4 will be. And, you know, I'm sure as news comes out, we'll be covering it. But what do you guys think? Are you interested in Star Trek 4 from the rebooted franchise? I believe it's called the Kelvin timeline. Please don't hurt me, Trekkies, if I'm wrong. Just correct me in the comments. But yeah, I'm excited for this. I enjoy the other three movies. What do you guys think? Let me know as we move on to our next story. And this is a bit of casting news, and it is from Deadline. I'm not lying to you this time. Katie O'Brien is an actress who was recently in The Mandalorian Season 3, and she just had a big breakout role in Love Lies Bleeding, a movie that I didn't review for the channel because I saw it late, but I really enjoyed. I liked that film a lot. And Mission Impossible has this thing where they just say, we only cast beautiful women. They just do it every single time. Every time you watch a Mission Impossible movie, you're like, there is not a non-beautiful woman in this movie. And they are continuing that trend because Katie O'Brien has joined Mission Impossible 8, which is currently filming right now. I'm going to take this from Deadline. After wowing with her muscular turn in A24's Love Lies Bleeding, Katie O'Brien has joined the cast of the 8th Mission Impossible for Paramount Pictures and Skydance, sources tell Deadline. Details as to the plot of the latest spy actioneer in the series remain under wraps as does her role, but it follows up Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. They fucking removed the part one in the article. I will not remove it in my heart and Team Physical Media forever because it's on my 4K. This is fantastic news. Katie O'Brien is an incredible actor, and the work that they've been putting in has been really great. They've been really grinding over the course of their career. The article mentions that they've been in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Westworld, The Walking Dead. They're going to be in the new Twisters. You know, they are just killing it. And it's exciting to see them kind of get a big break in a movie like Mission Impossible 8. And honestly, I want to see her fucking fight Tom Cruise. I want to see it really bad. She is a badass, and I would love to see that fight. That'd be a great fight. I'm just kind of manifesting that Katie O'Brien fights Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible 8. Let's hope it happens. What do you guys think about Katie O'Brien getting cast in Mission Impossible 8? Should be Dead Reckoning Part 2, but they won't do it because they're cowards. Let us know in the comments as we move on to our next story. And this next story is something that a lot of people my age have kind of been waiting to happen, even if it's not the highest of your anticipation list. It's something that when you hear it, you're going to be like, oh, good. We kind of wanted this to happen. And I'm taking this from the Hollywood Reporter, and that is that Freaky Friday 2 is officially a go with the Welcome to Chippendales director, Nisha Ganatra. If I said that wrong, I apologize. Taking this from the Hollywood Reporter, Disney is getting ready to get its freaky on one more time. What a weird sentence. The studio has topped Nisha Ganatra, who most recently helmed episodes of Hulu's miniseries Welcome to Chippendales, to direct a sequel to the 2003 family comedy Freaky Friday, which was a remake of a remake of a remake of a remake, you know, that whole history. Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan, who starred in the original, are in negotiations to reprise their roles as the mother and daughter combo who find themselves switching bodies and lives. The article also goes on to mention that it is still undecided if it will be released theatrically or just a Disney Plus movie. Come here. Closer. Fucking release it theatrically. Come on. Like, yeah, I understand why you'd want to make it a Disney Plus movie. It's a big draw for people to stay in and watch. Yeah. You know the budget's not going to be all that high. Jamie Lee Curtis might be expensive because she's now an Oscar winner. But, like, honestly, that's it, you know? Like, just release it in theaters. I feel like if you market this movie right, that's where it comes down to, the marketing. Whether this film does well in theaters or not is going to come down to how it is marketed. If you market it well, it will make its money in the theater. Just do it. And then it will do better on streaming, because it always shows that movies that come out in theaters first do better on streaming than most originals do. I digress. Look, I think this is very exciting. I have a soft spot for that original Freaky Friday movie. The original, I say. It's a remake of a remake of a remake. But it was a very fun movie growing up, and you can tell everyone making that film just had such a fun time making it, and I think it'd be the same thing. I think when we start seeing footage from this as it shoots, you're just going to see Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan just having the time of their lives. And that's what we want to see. We want to see those two amazing people having the time of their lives on set. So what do you guys think about this? Let me know in the comments as we move on to our next story. And this one is a bit of a doozy. So listeners of the show know that I am a big fan of the Insider newsletter, the one that's run by Jeff Snyder. I think it's very well written. I think it's interesting. I think Jeff Snyder is a great journalist, despite, you know, some of the stuff that goes on his social medias. Recently, he had ran a story about a new supernatural thriller called Day Drinker, which would be directed by Mark Webb, who famously made 500 Days of Summer, Gifted, The Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. And what he claimed is an exclusive is that it will star Johnny Depp and Sydney Sweeney in the lead roles. And he kind of goes on to, you know, describe the project a little bit in his newsletter and talk about, you know, what the project is, who they're going to be playing, blah, 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 blah. And not long after, you know, as the aggregated sites on social media started running with it, one that I'm a big fan of personally called Discussing Film, eventually a bunch of these different ones had sources reach out to them from Sydney Sweeney's team saying that a representative for Sydney Sweeney has confirmed with us that she will not be starring in Day Drinker alongside Johnny Depp, despite reports. Sydney Sweeney even tweeting, woke up to rumors with like little emojis around them. But, you know, anyways, go see Immaculate. She was, you know, being a promotional avenue there. And, you know, sometimes things get people wrong, but Jeff Snyder is not backing down and is like, no, goddammit, she's in this movie. And he's like, listen, she didn't deny it in the tweet, right? And he's saying, like, I think her team is just mad that I ruined a big announcement that was probably going to come at the Cannes Film Festival. And he just went off. He went off, man, on social media. You can watch it, or you can see it. Like, you can go on and see it. It was pretty crazy. And here's the thing. I'm very curious to see whether or not this is going to be true. Right? Because the reason why there's even controversy around it is because it would be starring Johnny Depp, you know, recently coming off of the Amber Heard trials. He's been doing some international films recently, but this looks like it would be like a big American production, which he hasn't done in a while. Here's the thing. There's a big chance that Jeff just got false information, misinterpreted the information, got it wrong. And then that's why Sydney's team reached out to the aggregators and said, like, nope, this is not happening. This is false. Don't believe it. But how funny would it be if she does end up doing this movie and Jeff was right? Because it is going to be unbearable on Twitter. It's going to be so funny. It's entertainment at its finest. But yeah, I'm just curious to see how this is going to play out. Like, is she actually going to be in the movie? Is she not going to be in the movie? If she's not, what's Jeff going to say? If she is, even more so, what is he going to say? You know, I'm curious about this. You know, I get caught up in like the drama of the you know, film journalism world, and this caused a lot of drama at the end of last week. So what do you guys think? Do you think this would be a good idea for Sydney Sweeney to star in? I mean, Mark Webb is a great director, and this seems like it'd be an interesting movie, but what do you think? Do you think it's true? Do you think it's happening? Do you think it's not happening? Do you think all of this is being blown out of proportion for no reason? Let me know in the comments as we move on to our final news story of the day before moving on to the box office. A couple weeks ago on the show, we reported that Dan Lin had been hired to be the new leader of the Netflix film division. And he recently started work at the Netflix film division, and boy, oh boy, did he get to fucking work. I'm going to take this from The Hollywood Reporter. According to two people familiar with the meeting that followed regarding Lin first being approached to run the Netflix film division, Lin was blunt in his assessment of Netflix's output. The movies were not great and the financials didn't add up. People at Netflix appreciated the honesty and shortly after was asked if he would be open to leaving his company and to run the film division. It's very reminiscent of like the scene in Ted, every time he has a meeting with the manager thinking he's going to get fired because he does something crazy, and then the manager's like, we should promote you. It's just what it felt like to me. He was just like, you guys suck. And they were like, please come work for us, is what it seemed like. The article goes on to talking about like why it was an interesting job for Dan Lin to take and why he'd accepted that job and not running DC, which was an offer from him previously. And to me, the most interesting part of the article comes right here, where it says, according to insiders, the Lin-era Netflix film slate will be made up of a majority of mid-size offerings, with the streamer having found its biggest hits with comedies, rom-coms, and family films. Scattered in there will be a handful of big movies and requisite awards contenders, though the slate may be smaller than those working with Netflix are accustomed. The industry, which has been hearing about Netflix belt-tightening for the better part of the past year, won't pin smaller paydays on Lin. So, finally, someone with sense is running things over there, and they're basically saying, hey, we are not going to be spending $200 million on movies that go straight to streaming. We are never going to see that money back. At least we're not going to be doing that all the time, which is what Netflix was doing. They do say they're going to do a couple big films, but he's like, mid-budget rom-coms and comedies is where we thrive, where we survive, where the data shows people are watching the most, and that's what will cause people to sign up for the service in regard to that film division. And then, of course, they mentioned the awards contenders as well, because you also want that. You want to attract great filmmakers and kind of use their awards campaigns to, you know, help shepherd something there. Listen, I'm incredibly happy that Dan Lin is running the Netflix film division. I always said it was a great idea, and I think that hearing what we're hearing now, the Netflix film division's in great hands, and I'm really looking forward to where it goes from here and the great things that Dan Lin's going to be able to do with Netflix. What do you guys think about Dan Lin starting at Netflix and the changes and decisions he's going to be making? Let me know in the comments as we move on to the box office! So I have to pull from Box Office Mojo, which was destroyed by IMDb, by the way, because the numbers website is currently down right now. So forgive the phone, I'm just throwing an audible here for myself. Coming in first was Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, making $80 million in its opening weekend. Holy shit, good for them. Coming in second was Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, making another $15 million, dropping 65% though in its second weekend. It's a little bit more of a drop than you want to see. Doom Part 2 came in third, making another $11 million. And Kung Fu Panda 4 came in fourth, making another $10 million. And Immaculate came in fourth, making another $3.2 million, only not dropping 39.1% in week two. Whew! Good for Immaculate. Arthur the King coming in fifth, making another $2.4 million. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire has made $195 million worldwide already. Good for them. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire has made $108 million worldwide already. All right, already crossing that 100 mark. It still has a while to go for profitability there. Doom Part 2 has now crossed $627 million worldwide. God, good for that movie. Immaculate has made $13 million worldwide, and you know that budget had to not be that at all, so they are killing it. Kung Fu Panda 4 has now crossed $346 million worldwide, and I believe it broke a record about being a family animated movie during the pandemic with its money. I believe it's now the number one since the pandemic. And Arthur the King, actually, no, that would have been Mario. What fucking record did they break? They broke something. I saw it in the trace. Arthur the King now has $19 million worldwide. It's been hanging in there in the top five, but I think as the movies start coming out, because we have a lot coming out next week, we have Monkey Man, we have The First Omen, and then after that, eventually we're going to get fucking Fall Guy, which is going to cause some stuff. It's going to get interesting. It's going to be an interesting box office weekend. And I would normally dive into the numbers a lot more and go through it, but like I said, the website is down. Forgive me. But I will make predictions. And they go as follows. I think that Godzilla Kong will hold number one in the number one spot. I'm going to go Monkey Man taking the number two, The First Omen taking number three, Immaculate taking number four, and Doom Part 2 taking number five. I think that's what we're going to see. That is a completely batshit prediction because I didn't even consider most things. But you know what? That's what we're going to do. If you guys are listening audio only, please consider going over to YouTube and subscribing. If you're watching on YouTube and you are on the go and you don't have time to watch, please consider going to your podcasting app of choice to listen to us audio only. Thank you for being here with me on today's episode of the Movie Nights Roundtable. Be on the lookout for more content this week. We have a couple movie reviews coming up. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we will see you on the next one.